You know that ridiculous way pet owners talk to their animals?
Who's my boy? You want a potty for daddy?
Yeah, he's the best dog in the world.
Yeah, you won't hear any of that here. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It's 9:35 and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a returning guest on the line, Dr. Aaron Tepe, who is the owner of Tepe Veterinary Service and is a professor at Brown-Mackey University in Cincinnati, Ohio. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Tepe.
Thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you back. Doctor, as Rick was saying during the break, the response we got from your last appearance was really phenomenal. We had people commenting on the volume of information you provided. So no pressure on you, but with Rick in the room, we expect you to at least double it, if that's okay.
All right, I'll do my best.
Okay, fantastic. We've been talking this morning about the making of dog food and the issue of recalls because there have been a number of them and they've been increasing. I was interested in your take on that.
Yeah, I did a little bit of research. I'm not the best research buff out there, but best I could find, there was an article on the AVMA site last night. There's actually been 13 major recalls that I could find just in the past calendar year. That was 2011 data. And probably about a third of those, just from glancing at it, were all salmonella-type cases, mm-hmm. which is a pretty scary thing to be recalled on.
Can you comment a little bit about salmonella and how it affects our dog population and what concerns we should have as a consumer?
Right. When you think salmonella, everybody thinks chicken. Chicken and eggs. That's the big scare with raw eggs, the big scare with raw chicken. And the scary part with salmonella is it's such a aggressive little bacteria that for a normal amount of bacteria, say an E. coli case, and these are just guesstimate type numbers, it might take something like 100,000 E. coli to make you sick. With mm-hmm. salmonella, it takes 10.
Okay.
So 10 bacteria, not 10,000.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much. So the scheme of things is much scarier when you're dealing with some of the more aggressive bacterial components like salmonella. So it just doesn't take much to happen.
And in your practice, do you see a lot of it actually affecting the dog or the humans that have the dog?
We, primarily what I see is, it affecting the dogs. It typically causes, really severe GI distress, so a lot of vomiting. And the diarrhea is impressive. I mean, there's diarrhea, and then there's clearly, like, infectious bacterial type diarrheas. Those dogs are way sicker. Clearly, those dogs are also a huge health risk to the people that are working in the clinic. So it kind of compounds at that point. And then, like many bacterial infections, once they're over the disease and feeling better and can go home, they're probably still not completely safe and probably still shedding the bacteria. So from start to finish, you're looking at, a time where they could be infecting anybody else they come into contact with or anything for multiple weeks, depending on the severity and how long it takes them to rid the bacteria out of their body.
And is there anything that last time we talked a lot about, preventative and helpful food additives and type of nutrition? Are there things that the consumers can do that would actually reduce either the time it takes to repair from it or the possibility of them coming down with it?
Right. Nutrition is so key, like we talked last time. And with nutrition being key, and even going to all the way to the other end of the spectrum of feeding raw, I mean, salmonella is a very real possibility. And when you hear people that are anti-raw feeding, they that's the first thing they bring up, all salmonella and chicken. And absolutely, that's true. But the harmful effects of chronic intake of processed foods to our bodies and to our animals' bodies are just as bad. Mm-hmm. So at some point, the owner has to take some of that responsibility on themselves. A recall like this, is something that happens. The problem is it not just affected dogs. My understanding is it also affected some people. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about this in class the other day, one of the girls was like, yeah, my daughter eats dog food all the time. And I'm, why? Her child, had she been feeding this food, would have, could have potentially, gotten the infection. So any kind of mass marketing or mass production is always going to increase the potential for, you know, at risk. So by the time you compound, you know, okay, you have a species that has a higher propensity to have a specific bacteria, you raise it in an environment which then encourages that very bacteria from happening, and then you're slaughtering tens of thousands of chicken at one time, you've got a huge potential for carrying that through however far that food goes. And sometimes, depending on the foods, they will actually take some of that food and freeze dry it and then spray it on top of it so that it's not even cooked. Some of that would be cooked off. Mm-hmm. But at some point, clearly the food went through a process where the salmonella was allowed to continue.
Allowed to pass through. And you know, the more we want it as natural as possible, but then at the same time we want it as well distributed as possible, kind of herein lies the problem, I would assume.
Correct. Correct.
And what about as far as in the recovery process, do things like probiotics that would help maybe do some competitive exclusion in the gut lining or whatnot, can that help the animal get any healthier quicker that's had problems, or is that...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anything like probiotics, there's a number of different supplements on the market that you can use. Again, going back to that basic nutrition, the top two things that any animal or person that leaves the hospital, any kind of hospital condition, and the top two things they are sleep deprived and malnourished. And that doesn't matter if, and I think truthfully in veterinary medicine, we probably do a little bit better job of actually feeding our animals a better nutrition because we've all had hospital food, right?
Right.
We've all been there. So, you know, with the nurses coming in every 2 hours, you can't really recover. And in a veterinary clinic, if they're in a 24-hour center, there's people running around all night. It doesn't matter how much you try and calm things down for them. So, you know, a lot of that is going to have to pick up. But anything you can do to get the gut in a better place, probiotics, prebiotics, which are foods that feed the healthy bacteria that may be already there. Right. You know, and certainly, you know, a full spectrum, which is why they're going to be in the hospital anyway, of antibiotics and fluids and anything else that will support their body while they're dealing, you know, with such a horrible, you know, little bacteria like salmonella, certainly is going to do the trick. And then you've got to get them back to eating and drinking as you know, quick as possible so that they can return their gut system back to normal.
And what do you think from a dog food manufacturer, what efforts should be taken on their part to kind of discern all the different product or ingredient possibilities that they have to put in their food? What discretion would one take to really get the best of those type of ingredients into their food without maybe putting in foods that are just a full of hype? You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Right, right. And I think, you know, that comes down to some degree, in my mind, a business model. You know, clearly they're in business not just to make a good product, but also to make a profit at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they're dealing with, you know, many investors that are, you know, hoping that they make a huge profit. And the bigger the profit, the more likely they are to keep their job.
Right.
At the same time, at some point, you're going to lose the quality, which is the way most of these companies started out, is they wanted a certain quality and a certain amount of nutrition, et cetera. And then the bigger they get and the more they're trying to pinch out every bit of profit they can in order to progress the company forward, at some point I think you can lose sight of some of that. Most of the dog foods that I see nowadays, and I'm all about feeding multiple you know, I'm somebody that believes in feeding different foods. I don't think you should stick with one food for the entire life of the dog unless there's a true medical need. I think, you know, just like with us, you shouldn't just eat, you know, Pond's hot dogs your whole life. You should probably branch out and have some vegetables or something someday. So I think branching out is a good thing. And at the same time, when I look at some of the foods, in any given food, there might be 5 or 6 or 7 different protein sources. And every time they bring a source in, you've got a more and more of a chance. It starts multiplying at what point, who's bringing in what into the food.
Well, what would be some of the additives that the consumer would want to look for in a food, or what would be some of the, you know, criteria if you would recommend, if they're going to decide to use dry foods, what are some of the additives, if you will, that should be there, and what are maybe additives that might be, you know, just kind of filling in for the money?
Right. The big thing is because part of what I teach at school is nutrition. is the first five ingredients are going to be the most important. The rest of them are still important, but the first five are going to be probably 80 to 85% of what's in your food. And the number one thing that should never, ever be in there, which I see in probably at least one out of every five or six eggs that I pick up, is sugar. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely no reason there's sugar in dog food.
Okay.
That's one of the things that makes them eat the food, is because it tastes good, just like with us. But there's no nutritional value to sugar. So it's in there to make the dog eat something that they probably wouldn't normally eat. The next thing that I go for is that dogs, although considered omnivores, are technically carnivores. And that's where they're going to do their best. So I try and go as grain-free as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And some people can't do that for monetary reasons, et cetera. Some dogs don't do quite as well because it's still processed food, so they need the extra fiber and stuff that the carbs provide. But I try and get it as low as possible. Mm-hmm. But you have to kind of add them up, because if you add, like, if it says corn and wheat and barley, but chicken was its number one ingredient, but you add all the carbs together – by weight, they're still going to be the first ingredient.
Right.
So you have to kind of, you know, prepare that. The main thing that I really, really hate to see is there's a nutrient on the back of a package that you will see called Animal Digest. And I describe it as basically parts as parts and things that really probably aren't supposed to be edible that are put in a big vat and chemically treated and chemically digested.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spray it. They often spray that on the food.
Oh, okay.
And that's how yummy. I love Animal Digest.
Sounds like the original McNuggets.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like Scrabble Spam or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are some very good points, I think, that, you know, just an armchair, you know, recommendation, especially in your situation where you're encouraging people to try, you know, different at least recipes, if you will,
right,
to try to mix it up a little bit. They could definitely stumble into some pretty inferior food if they're not giving some kind of a guidance.
Well, and Dr. Tuppy, the one thing I wanted to bring up from our last discussion was, again, the issue of raw food, because then you're pretty much taking a lot of the manufacturers out of the equation. Correct me if I'm wrong. Now you're dealing with the same kind of food that human beings are eating.
Correct. And there are actually some food manufacturers out there that manufacture raw food. The advantage to that is that it is better balanced. They test it for vitamins and minerals and nutrients, and they also test it for things like salmonella and whatnot. So, you know, from that respect, it's still processed to some degree, but it's much less processed because obviously it's all still raw and it's not been cooked or heated to 500 degrees in a can or whatever. So you still have much better nutrient density. I think any time that you can bring a food source back as locally as possible, whether it is for yourself or for your animals, across the board, I still feel like that's probably, as long as you're balancing the nutrition, the better way to go. With animals, we just need to make sure that they're getting a good calcium supplement and they're getting, a full complement of minerals, and that you're altering their diet, that you're putting in organ meat. So if you're going to be feeding raw, you need to do a lot of research into it and also realize the potential hazards that they, you know, come about. You know, the other thing is, if you're going to be feeding your dog raw, you need to treat his bowl and where he eats as contaminated. I have a standard schnauzer, so her beard's about, you know, 4 inches long. So if she's eating raw food and then comes up and kisses you in the face, you just got a face full of, you know, raw chicken or whatever it was that she's eating. So there are definitely some health risks, you know, that can happen with it. At the same time, you've got to be willing to take on those responsibilities, because of the, you know, for me, I'm willing to take on those responsibilities for my own pet.
Right.
Well, when I talk to somebody else, I encourage them to do that for themselves.
Right. Doctor, I'm sorry we've run out of time, as always seems to happen when I speak with you. There's so much more we can discuss, but I'm sure we'll have you on again. We've been speaking with Dr. Aaron Tuppy from the Tuppy Veterinary Service and a professor at Brown Mackey College in Ohio. Thank you so much for being on the show. And Rick, we're going to continue the conversation right after the break on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.
Got some ideas, questions, suggestions? Email us at mmpets@1320WILS.com or message us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/mmpets. Like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/MMPets. You can upload your own pictures and interact with other pet enthusiasts.